The next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan. It's a lot of Nets podcast.
I mean, the only Net fans you know. The only Nets fans you know.
At least they've got some self-aware.
Man. I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to the Only Nets Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter. I'm joined by my friend and fellow Nets confidant, Charlie.
Peter, pumpkin eater. It is autumn after all. And the Nets got some good energy back. And championship back on. And it's only a couple of games, but Feeling pretty good.
Man, this past week has just been, I always say the Nets are a roller coaster. I think that was an understatement. It was the hell and just, I don't know. I just felt like I was personally burnt out from everything. I just wanted them to play basketball, but all we kept on hearing about was Steve Nash getting fired, the situation with Kyrie, and it was just a lot. Let's just jump right into it. What's the working title?
Working title is Jacques the World. Formerly called Jacques and Awe, but due to unfortunate circumstances, a.k.a. one of the New York tabloids, yes, tabloids, a.k.a. the New York Post, Times, and or Newsday, whatever the hell it is, stole my fucking title, Jacques and Awe, which I thought was like a fucking awesome, clever title, but apparently not clever enough because someone else is fucking thinking of it.
Yeah, we actually had it as the working title before, like you said, and just totally got stolen. But, you know, shit happens, right? What are you going to do? So,
yeah, great.
Just, you know, what are you going to do? Jumping into it. The team is 5-7, including 3-1 in the last four. But like I said, a very bumpy road. I personally felt burnt out. I think you felt burnt out. There was calls of tearing the team down. We're going to cut Kyrie. Who are we going to hire? What the fuck is going on? Is Marks on the way out? Should Joe Tsai sell the team? It was just a lot of pointing, a lot of blaming, and a lot of heat going all the way around. But I think the best way to kind of jump into this is just talking about Kyrie, and he got suspended 5 games, but this finally kind of leaked onto the court. This is a basketball podcast, of course, but once it leaks onto the court, we got to talk about it.
Okay, to clarify, who suspended Kyrie? Was it NBA or was it the Nets?
The Nets.
Wait, so Kyrie could be playing right now.
Well, he got a 5-game suspension, but I believe after the 5 games, after he performs his list of stuff they wanted him to do, he can come back, I guess. He had a meeting with Adam Silver that was quote-unquote productive, but it's still up in the air.
Okay, so the serious question is, the Nets have played really well without Kyrie in the lineup. Do you cut Kyrie? Do you trade him? Do you want this guy back? There's even growing like pessimism that like the Nets won't even like ever accept him on the court again. Like they're saying his Nets days are over. I don't know. I don't know what to gauge of this, Pete. This is all a crazy turn of events.
Absolutely. We kind of felt when he came to Brooklyn that it was the hometown kid playing for the hometown team. And yeah, he had drama other places, but he was not going to bring it here because he wanted to win a championship with us, right? But I feel like, I don't know, maybe he's kind of taking it to the last string. Like I don't know if there's any more room on this team. He has no trade value, I would imagine, right now. But I think the Nets would definitely do a deal with the Lakers almost if it came down to it. Like, I don't know. It's tough. As we were talking about before, Brooklyn has a humongous Jewish community. A lot of Net fans are Jewish. Do you accept Kyrie Irving back? Is the apology enough? Has he done enough? I don't know.
if he just like came out straight up and said like I'm sorry after posting that, like I'm not even mad he posted it because maybe he just wasn't aware of something, maybe he wasn't fully educated on it. I don't know, maybe he feels he is, maybe that's where his response came from. For people who don't know, after he posted it, people like were asking him, there was that back and forth interview, who was it with, what reporter was it,
Nick Friedel,
where they were getting a little testy about are you anti-Semitic, and he wouldn't just say no, I'm not anti-Semitic. He would dance around things like saying sorry. He eventually apologized in a post, and he eventually said he's going to grow and get information. But initially, after he posted it, he really kind of doubled down on it. And I think that's the worst part of it, is that he kind of doubled down on it. Instead of just straight up apologizing, saying, I was wrong, I'll be better. It's all you had to kind of do. Even if you feel like you're wrong, or you feel like you're right, it's all you kind of really had to do in this situation just to get the heat off your team. This is a huge distraction for the Brooklyn Nets. This is a huge distraction for the NBA as a whole. And it brings heat on us Nets fans. And it's not cool because I feel like as a Nets fan, we already get shit on enough. What more do we have to do? And this guy is a quote-unquote a fucking Nets fan. Why is he doing this to us, first of all? Second of all, Nets are playing better without him, it seems like. So, I don't know. I don't know, Pete. I don't know where to go here. This is a really choppy water.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough topic that I actually had to get more educated in myself to kind of understand it better. And it's a lot, and it's just sad because the guy is a great player. You want to root for him so bad, but there's some things that you just can't, you know, that just can't go on. There's no room. I think we both can agree. I know for a fact we both can agree. There's no room for hate. There's no room for any type of shit like that, especially in the borough of Brooklyn.
I don't even think he expressed hate, any ill will towards anything. You have to kind of look at it from the time that he's gotten here. The first year that he came here, not much really happened. He had a bad shoulder injury and couldn't really play too much. Again, it sucked, but it's an injury. Whatever. Next year, you know, another more injury situations. And then, like, the social justice stuff that he took his quote-unquote time off for. The next year, you had the vaccine issues where he didn't want to get vaccinated. Again, that's a personal choice. It's his body, his choice, whatever. I fully supported him. It sucked that he couldn't play, but I said, what are you going to do? The guy doesn't feel like he thinks this is going to harm him. Maybe he's not smart. Maybe he's not educated in it enough. I don't agree with it, but whatever. That's his choice. Now, this thing is kind of affecting a bigger picture. And you get it to a social point of view. It's way above mine. Yours, and even guys like Steve Nash, who I feel like kind of lost his job because he couldn't handle his superstars. And then that brings us to our now coaching situation where we kind of don't have a coach. Steve Nash left. Basically what happened was he felt like he lost his voice. Apparently, I don't know, you told me about this, there were some scouts in one of the games and Kyrie went rogue.
Yeah, for 10 plays. It was supposedly the scout counted 10 plays. I think that was in the post. Man, I need to have all my stuff in front of me, but I think it was the post, could be wrong, that said there was the scout counted 10 plays that Kyrie just not only ignored Steve Nash, but did the total opposite of what he wanted to do on a certain offensive set, offensive sets, I should say, which is crazy.
That's like major defiance of an authoritarian figure, and I feel like Kyrie is all about that. So it kind of fits in with Kyrie's MO. Again, at what point do you put this on blaming Steve Nash for being a bad coach, or maybe a bad coach is not having the voice of his players. Maybe that's what makes him a bad coach. Maybe it's just not the X's and O's. It's just maybe his voice doesn't get through to his players. What point of this is a bad coach, and what point of this is his players defying him, and he really couldn't do what he meant to do?
I really have no fucking clue. I have no idea what it was, but I just know that this whole thing was a clusterfuck, and it only got worse when the news came out that Ime Udoka was going to be hired as the next coach I was very happy. Understand, you know, I'm looking at it at a basketball standpoint, right? But Nets were getting a lot of heat. I know KD wanted Ime. I know Marks wanted Ime. The league offices, I don't think, was too hot on the move. We still don't know what happened with Ime Udoka, but from a basketball standpoint, I don't think you could make a better case for a better basketball coach at this point for this team. But, man, just a crazy set of events that led to Jock Vaughn getting hired. Do you want to add anything on Ime?
Apparently, I find it very – I don't know how true this is because we're not in the Nets, but apparently, like, female staffers who had power within the Nets organization didn't feel comfortable with having a guy like Ime Udoka. Yet, this is also coming from – we don't know what he did still. We have no fucking idea.
I thought a very overlooked tweet by Shams that I think was posted last night or a couple nights ago. Basically, he said, as the result of the Nets' due diligence – result of the Nets' due diligence.
Meaning they asked. Yeah, they mean they fucking asked the Celtics.
Maybe that. Maybe they did their own homework. Whatever it is, whatever was done, they found out something that they did not like. And I think it was a mix of that. Maybe, supposedly, I'm going to quote Nets Daily, saying that people in the league office were not happy about that possible hiring. And as you said, staffing within the Brooklyn Nets had said similar stuff. So, I don't know. He was a great basketball fit. But if the guy's a creep, then, you know, do you want him as your head coach? I don't know. I really don't know.
I mean, I feel like only creeps make the best head coach. Yet, also, no one gives him shit for beating his wife.
Jesus Christ, that was fire.
It was fire, man, because like there's a shitty double standard within the NBA, you know? Sorry, that's how it is. I'm glad we have Jock. I'm glad the Nets did go with the safe hire in Jock Vaughn. Let's just get to this guy because I'm tired of talking about the bullshit with all this with the net. Man, I just want to get to the basketball because I feel like it's been nothing but the drama surrounding the basketball and injuries and it's just so much, man. I'm happy with Jock Vaughn. I think he was a safe hire, yes. He's a guy with 2 years of assistant coaching experience with the Spurs. He was a head coach of the Magic for 3 years. He ended up with a 58-158 record. As an assistant coach of the Nets for nearly 7 years, he got a little bit of a feet wet in the bubble, and he did a good job. He was 9-5 as interim, but he did get swept. His team did get swept by the Raptors in the bubble playoffs. But now that he started in Brooklyn, he's, what is he, 4-2 in his Nets tenure or 4-1?
4-2, yeah, right? But I believe that the 9-5 is added in with both records of his interim coach. Because technically, yes, he was added in and he did become the head coach, right? But technically, the intern label was still there until the Knicks game, right? So you kind of have to add those games, prior games to that record.
So he's technically just 1-0.
Technically, yes. As a Nets head coach, technically he is 1-0. Which is kind of funny if you think about it.
How do you feel about Jock Vaughn? I'm happy. You?
I'm happy because I'm looking at these results. I'm like, what is this team? Did these guys just really hate Steve Nash that much? Was it Kyrie? Was it Jock Vaughn? I don't know. We're going to have to give the guy more time. But you know what? They gave him a shot. And also, they gave him a 1 year extension, which I kind of believe is kind of a way to protect him. You'll see teams do this. They'll add it. If a guy is going to be a free agent or his contract's going to end at the end of the year and he's going to be brought in as a coach midseason, they'll give him another year because let's face it, if you're a player in the locker room and you know this guy in front of you is going to be gone next year and you have a long-term deal, you're not going to listen to him. You're not going to get as much respect, right? So I thought that was a very smart move, adding on that extra year. And if it doesn't work out, you could always fire him and bring in whoever you want to bring in, which still may happen, but who knows?
Yeah, man. Well, it's something that I feel personally, like, I think the Nets are responding to him. And I think he brings experience And it just seems like one thing I'm impressed with is his timeouts. I think his timeouts are extraordinary. Again, this is coming from someone who's watched Steve Nash call timeouts for the last couple of years. So anything that can put their two hands into a T-shape
can
do a better job than Steve Nash.
Absolutely. Like, just going into we had that, like I said, that horrible week. A lot going on. The first game, they had to go to D.C. to face the Wizards. Nets responded beautifully with a 128-86 win. Great second half. Washington Wizards had 13 points in the third. Unbelievable. 60 points in the paint. Biggest lead was 42 points. KD almost a near triple-double, 28, 9, and 11. The 11, of course, was the assists. Cam actually got to play. He put in 17. Beal put in 20 points. Kuzma put in 19 points. Porzingis added in 14 and 10. But most importantly, man, fucking KD.
Dude, that ankle breaker was fucking nuts. That was one of the nicest fucking ankle breakers I've ever seen. He caused that guy to literally just split. I'm surprised he didn't blow out his fucking groin muscle and pop a hammy or something.
That was one of the most beautiful KD moves I think I've seen while he's been in Brooklyn. Did you see the bench reaction? I thought that was so fucking great.
They were like, they couldn't believe it. Yo, even the Wizards were just like, shit.
Royce did a spin. I saw Yuta was on the court. Yuta did like a little jump. Like, that was just so great. It was pretty much, they held the Wizards down to under 90 points, which I thought was amazing. Wizards wound up shooting 36% from the field, 23% from three. And another stat for the Nets that I thought was very telling. Only 7 turnovers the entire game.
Amazing.
Very, very good.
Honestly, great, great start. I know they lost to the Pacers under Jacques Vaughn, but this was a really, really nice response from that game. Their defense looks great, really, man. They're doing good. And then they moved on to Charlotte on the second leg of their road trip. Both teams ended up shooting under 40% from the field this game. This game was a fucking... It was tough to watch some offense this game. But anyway, the Nets ended up going on a 21-7 run at the end of the game, which was led by KD. Come back from double-digit deficit in the fourth. And dude, with like 4 minutes left, they were down by 10. I was like, oh, fuck, another goddamn loss. Here we go. And bam, what happens? We come back. KD ends up dropping 27. Cam is the offense we need in the praise of Kyrie. They need to free Cam. They finally freed Cam. Jacques Vaughn, another great thing he did was free Cam Thomas. The guy is a walking bucket. Yuta Watanabe, man, I got to tell you, I love this fucking guy, and we keep talking about it. This guy, he only put up 8 points, Pete, but listen, he did everything he needed to do. He hit important threes. He was clutch. He played great defense. He moved the ball, and he has the trust of Kevin Durant. And that's all you need to know. With the big shot on the line, KD passes it to him, and he's ready, and bang, hits a three. Very important three.
I think it shows the trust in Yuta. And Jacques Vaughn made, a quote about that before after the game, talking about how the trust in this team has just gone up. Like I said, great game by the Nets, man. This game could have been a game last week, 2 weeks ago. They would have folded. Rozier put up 25.7 rebounds. Oubre added in 18. And this looked like a game that they were ready to fold and lose, and they absolutely came back, showed heart. And you could tell after the game the excitement and energy from this team, that there was an energy shift kind of building. I don't know where it came from, but it's definitely building. But unfortunately, they had to bring it to Dallas. And
team,
of course,
man.
You know, not everything worked out great in Dallas. They wound up losing 96-94. KD got fouled at the three-point line with us down three. Hits the first one, misses the second, missed the third one on purpose. We almost got a bucket out of it, couldn't get a shot off in the last seconds. And it just looked like they were just tired. They've been through a lot. This was a little bit of a, you know, a tough road trip for them. But they almost came back to another game that they were winning, gave up the lead, and they wound up fighting back. And like I said, if there's a such thing as a moral win, I really think that this was it. KD is really showing that he's a fucking leader, man. 26 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Am had 19. Royce put up 15. 8 assists. 2 steals, 2 blocks. And, man, it was a good game. Unfortunately, it was a loss, though.
Man, there's not much you could do when Luka is just going out of his mind, man. Put up 36 points. Finney Smith, again, seems to always kill the Nets, puts up 18. And unfortunately, our boy Spence only put up 2. And every time I watch him, I cry a little bit. But anyway, more importantly, I think you got to really examine Ben Simmons and his lack of production. I mean, the guy's got to – I think he's got to start coming off the bench until he kind of finds his groove personally. And Seth has – you know, I it's a little premature this game, but Steph had a bad game, but he'll turn it around. And I think the biggest downside of this game ended up being Yuta Watanabe spraining his ankle. That is a crucial, crucial loss for us going forward. The dude starts finally showing that he's a good guy to come. There's the first man off the bench. The guy is proving to be a six man for us. The guy is overcoming basically a roster invite. And fought, made it until basically being the sixth man. And then you lose him as a, you know, lose him to a sprained ankle, which we don't know because look what fucking happened to Joe Harris last year. Fucking sprained his ankle and then gone for the year. So we hope that Yuta can come back healthy.
Yeah, and that injury looked very bad. I don't know if all you guys saw it, but he had to get helped off of the court. Could not make it off of the court by himself. Luckily made it into the locker room by himself. But, man, that was a very scary injury, and I feel like the heart and soul of this team was, you know, taken out. And maybe that had to do something with the loss going forward. You know, they just felt like they just ran out of gas after that. This guy, like you said, invite, roster invite, last minute, becomes pretty much the sixth man, becomes the, you know, the backup center almost in some cases for when we're playing small ball. Fits in perfectly everywhere, it seems, makes the perfect passes, plays the great defense you need, just is always ready to play. And I, like you said, that was definitely the biggest loss for that game. I definitely would have taken the loss if we could have, you know, kept them healthy. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Oh, I said, yeah, I was just about to ask, like, would you have rather won the game and still had him hurt, or would you rather lost the game and had him healthy? So you answered my question.
Yeah, unfortunately, he had both bad things happen.
Exactly.
You know,
but you know, when there's bad, there's good. And every time the Knicks come to town, good things usually happen for Brooklyn. So.
And every single time the Knicks go to Brooklyn, the same shit happens down the stretch that it becomes Julius Randle versus Kevin Durant. And you can't win that. How is this guy so good? Made that shit look easy. And the most frustrating part is there's nothing that we could do about it.
Whenever you need to turn, you know, get a win in the column, it's always nice to be playing the Knicks. He ended up trouncing New York Knicks, 112-85. Pete, this was a bloodbath. The get-go, it was beautiful, wonderful. AD triple-double, need I say more, 29 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists. Getting big production from guys like Edmund Sumner, putting up 18 points. Guy's given a starting point guard role, and he's taking it, and he's earning it, and he's playing extremely well. He hit that corner three-peat, and I got so hyped. Then you got Clax being consistent, 12.6 rebounds. Guys bringing energy every night down in the paint. You have guys like Ben, again, not showing up with the points, but 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and he played great defense. He had a putback dunk, which was awesome. And then he also had a bunch of steals. Looked good face guarding. And you have the resurgence of Seth Curry. Hopefully this game gets Seth Curry going. 23 points, 7 of 13 from the field. 6 three-pointers. So hopefully this gets him going, Pete. What do you think about this game? What are your opinions on it?
I just thought it was another game, a team held under 100 points. Knicks, 32% from the field. 27% from three. Amazing. Randall, 19 points at the half, only finished with 24. Reddish, starting for the Knicks, 0 for 7. Brunson, 4 for 14, who I really don't like him. And I was very happy to see that he is not him. And the Knicks probably used up a lot of money on him for no reason. RJ Barrett, 5 for 14. Just a dominating win. We shot 41% from three. It was 69 to 44 at the half. We got 63 rebounds and 21 second chance points. It was fucking beautiful.
What was really, really awesome, Pete, not so much like you talked about the three-point shooting, but really what turned to the bad three? The Knicks are not a three-point shooting team by any means. They've improved, but right now it's not really their forte. So the Knicks tried to get the ball in the interior. They tried to force. The Nets' interior defense was solid. They were not giving the Knicks anything on the inside, which forced them to take contested threes, which they missed a lot of open threes too. They did. We're just cold. So let's call it like it is. I mean, the Knicks lost this game, but they were also very cold when they missed a lot of open looks too. But that comes to making them uncomfortable on the offense, making them rush passes, force them onto tough shots. That comes with making them comfortable. The Nets set the tone defensively by stopping the Knicks from getting inside. And that caused them to become inconsistent shooting. Not to mention they just suck and then the Knicks, but, you know, that's besides the point. But really what I want to mention this game, which was really I thought was awesome. Did you see the rant, the chirping between Julius Randle and KD?
Oh, I loved it. Did you see the Knicks fans and KD?
Loved it. Fucking loved it.
What was that stat you were telling me about? KD has not lost to the Knicks since putting on a Nets uniform, and Ben Simmons has never lost to the Knicks in his career.
16-0 against the Knicks.
Beautiful. Love it.
If we had to play the Knicks every game of the year, we'd be the best team ever.
82-0.
It was just funny, that whole game. Randle, when he hit that shot in KD's face, I think, before halftime, I think it was, he's like, all night. All night. He did end up with 19 points, like you said, but, man, he's like, all night. And then KD just, like, dropped it in his face and then said it right back to him. It was fucking awesome. I loved every bit of that.
He said all night, but then he only got 5 points for the rest of the game.
Funny how that works out.
He did scare me, though. I'm not going to lie. He did scare me. He had 19 points at the half, like I said. So I really thought this was going to be the game. You know, then all the jokes about his kid crying and stuff. So I'm like, oh, fuck, this guy's going to try to fucking put up 50 points tonight. And luckily, like I said, only 5 points after the half. Nets did a tremendous job. The defense is just insane. The Nets are the best defensive team since Jock Vaughn has taken over. I don't know what the fuck it is. Hey, guys, we usually don't do any ads or anything, but I just wanted to talk about this quickly. Bruce Jones, a.k.a. RU130 from Nets Twitter, has a charity organization called Jenny's Toys. Jenny's Toys helps families who are of need, who are less fortunate during the holiday season with toys, clothes, medical needs, and food. For more information, and if you'd like to donate, check out jennystoys.org. JENNIS toys.org. And we're back. The Nets have definitely reinvigorated themselves somehow. And there's a couple reasons why. I think we both have a couple different reasons why. We're going to do three reasons why the Nets are playing better. What are your three reasons?
All right, my first reason is chemistry and slash trust. Not and trust, slash trust. Basically, I don't know if Nash just lost his voice and the guys just started playing harder, but it just seems to me like the ball movement is way better. Like they're giving the extra passes, and they're just working on I just feel like the team just seems to be more connected with every play defensively. Their switches are more clean. The communication on defense and offense is both very good. And I just feel like there's an overall better vibe in that sense. And then the next thing is the effort they're putting in on defense. The gang rebounding. They're putting themselves in good position to rebound from anywhere. So right off the bat, that was a big weakness of theirs, was taking limiting second chance points on offensive rebounds and not letting offensive rebounds. So right in, since Jacques Vaughn came in, that immediately improved. And basically, as far as, like, you know, chasing down, like, loose balls, you know, just defensive effort in general, like a little more hard-nosed defense, you know, harder defense, getting a little chippy, you know, stuff like that. The next thing I think is the role players making a huge impact. Guys like Ed Sumner, Yuta when he was healthy. Royce O'Neal is turning out to be a hell of a player. He's not putting up those consistent numbers every night. I mean, he's putting up good points, but he'll have a dud of a night. He'll go like 4 of 10 one night and then like 6 of 8 the next, and he'll start feeling himself and then he'll again get cold. But the defense from Royce is always going to be there. I also think he's a good job. He doesn't turn the ball over too much. He's a good ball protector, but again, he's a little limited on his offense at the moment. But again, there's other role players I can name people. Those are just to name a few. But man, having guys that could just step in after not playing for a while, like Cam Thomas, make an immediate impact. These guys are going to be a big part if we keep winning.
Absolutely. My three reasons. The first one, I feel like the team has kind of bought in. Like we keep on saying, we don't know if it's Nash. I don't know if it's Jacques Vaughn. But this team looks committed to the game plan every night, something that was not happening maybe a week ago. I'm not sure why, but this team definitely looks like they're on the same page. And not only are on the same page, they're like following the script perfectly. Everyone, like you said, with the defensive effort part, everyone looks like they're in the spot that they're supposed to be in. Everyone's following, you know, whatever they're supposed to be doing. It's just everyone's following the role perfectly. I love it, man. Second is this new energy. Once again, I don't know where the fuck this came from. I don't know where this was hiding, but you could see it in KD's face. You could clearly see it in KD's face that this man is like reinvigorated. This is not the guy that was following Steve Nash a week ago that was like pouting or unhappy about shit. This guy smiling at these, you know, after game press conferences. This team is just like, I don't know, it feels like the D'Lo Nets and Dinwiddie Nets, that everyone's just smiling all the time and having a good time. Except the talent level on this team is a lot better. And finally, no Nash. Rotations are ridiculous now. We had Cam Thomas sitting on a team that would get cold, and we'd have a walking bucket not being used. Steve Nash's rotations were so ridiculous at times that Nets Twitter would see something and probably be right about it. And then when Steve Nash would change it to whatever Nets Twitter was saying, it would work. Just as something as simple as Ben coming off the bench has really helped this team a lot. I'm not sure like what the fuck was going on. I have no idea. But definitely Jacques Vaughn has an eye for this roster, and he knows his guys, and he's putting them in a position to maximize their strengths and, you know, kind of get rid of their weaknesses or make them as small as possible when they're on the court. Just amazing stuff.
They needed just someone with the fucking brain to step in there and be like, okay, well, this makes sense. Let me just do this. Absolutely. Someone with coaching experience and someone with leadership experience. So, yeah, there's that.
Yeah. You want to get to the wrap-up, or is there anything else you'd like to add in?
Yeah, man, I just like to get to the wrap-up. This has been a hell of a couple of weeks, man. This has been it's real something. It's real something, man. I'll tell you one thing about being a Nets fan. It's always – and we did a good job picking the right time to get a Nets podcast.
Oh.
It seems to be news every fucking week for us to talk about.
Absolutely. So, injury update. We're at the wrap up now. Obviously, Yuta has a sprain. Supposedly, it's a low grade sprain, according to Scoop B. Hopefully, he comes back sooner than later. But like you said, last time we heard about an ankle injury sprain with Joe Harris, he wound up never coming back. So let's hope it's not that. Is there any update on TJ? Now.
TJ is still missing in action. As of a couple weeks ago, he's preparing for, what is he? He's preparing for scrimmages, I guess. So we don't know. Maybe they'll give an update this week, next week. They usually put it out on Thursdays, right?
Something like that. We were supposed to get an update in November. Unfortunately, November is an entire month. So they might give us an update November 25th or tomorrow. We really don't know.
Man, he would be a big addition to us if he gets rolling.
Absolutely.
More importantly, I think the biggest elephant in the room right now is the Nets got another new jersey. Therefore, we have to review it. Therefore, we have to scrutinize it and talk about it because that's basically, we don't care about basketball. We care about
the jersey.
Gear. The jerseys. So, Pete, the white Basquiat jersey, the long-awaited white Basquiat. As of last 2 years ago, we had a black Basquiat jersey. As you don't know, to reiterate, Jean-Michel Basquiat was a Brooklyn artist. And the Nets basically took his designs and made a jersey with it. And they had a black one, and now they have a white one. I personally like the white one a lot better. It looks a little cleaner. I just think the black was a lot of different colors going on, and the white kind of neutralizes and kind of blends the colors a little nicer down the piping along the side.
I'm still not sold on it, but one thing I did like, what do you think about this? The names on the back are in blue.
I like it. I actually like it. I think it looks, I have to see it on the players. What I didn't like, though, is the cheap jerseys you get at, like, Dick's Sporting Goods. And the non-authentic jerseys, they look like crap, personally.
You see the shorts? I love the shorts. They put a crown on the shorts on one side, and then on the other side, it says Brooklyn, New York in big lettering. I thought that was fucking fly as hell.
Dude, I like them. I like them. I like it. It's going to look good on the court. It's going to look good with the players. I don't know if I'd buy one, and I don't know if I would look good in one because I think the ones you sell to people kind of look very boxy and squarey. Just, I don't know. I just don't think they're made well. Old swing hands were nice.
Yeah, swing men are not as good as they used to be. They're not stitched anymore, and I think that quality kind of took a major hit. And I personally don't like buying jerseys unless they're stitched. So I'm probably not going to get this one, but I definitely will get the classic, the Dr. J jersey, which they have not released yet for some reason. You can only buy a custom one for $150 on the Nets website, which is very strange considering that it's already been out for a couple weeks.
I do like it. I hope we get a nice blend of these. I do like the jersey lineup this year. I think it's the strongest jersey lineup. I don't think like the nicest jerseys in any of these, but I think as far as like solid, like nice jerseys, I feel like all three of the ones they released this year are really, really good, really stylish is the best word.
I gotcha.
So Pete, I think the real question on everyone listening's mind is what are we ranking these jerseys? So we have random Nets players to dish out. So out of 1 to 5 Quincy Aces, what are you giving it?
2.5.
Ooh, it's a low score, Pete.
I like the shorts, don't like the jersey.
Ooh. I'm going to give it a 3 Quincy ACs out of 5. I like it. Not the nicest one in this lineup. I personally like the statement jerseys the best. Then the throwbacks, the classics.
Time out. No. You like these jerseys, the white Basquiat's, more than the Dr. J jersey.
I gave the Dr. J jerseys a 3 out of 5 too, so... I gave the statements a 4 out of 5.
No. You ranked them ahead of that.
Yeah, I like these a little more.
Wow.
But so sue me. What do you want?
Wow.
I like them. I didn't like the, for some reason, I never liked the black ones, but these, I kind of dig them.
Anything else on the jerseys?
No, but I'm still going to mention the Swamp Dragons jersey. That's going to come out hopefully soon. I'm still putting that out there in the ether.
One day, Charlie, one day.
So the next. So we got a West Coast. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Pete. You take this one. I thought, ladies first.
Thank you, bro. So the Nets have a West Coast trip. Fuck you. We have a West Coast trip going forward. They're going to take on the Clippers next and then the Lakers. They're going to take on the Kings and Portland on the same trip. So the Nets are going to find out what they're made of. And if this new energy is just something that's a small game sample size, or something that could actually last, we're going to find out along that trip if Kyrie's coming back. There's going to be a lot coming out with this team.
In this four-game stretch, I think the Nets actually go 3-1.
I hope so. I really do.
I think we beat everyone but Portland.
Wow. That would be... Clippers are playing well.
So are we. But I just think Portland always play us really hard and play us very tough for whatever reason. Damian Lillard, we guard him well, but guys like Nurkic fucking kill us all the time. Those random European big guys just will always torch us for like a million points.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Follow us on the Twitters at NetFansYouKnow. We have the YouTube up. Please like and subscribe. You can go to youtube.com/@NetFansYouKnow. That's our handle. And on IG at @TheOnlyNetFansYouKnow. Have a great commute. Enjoy these couple days off. We're going West Coast tripping. And we're out.
You think I should get a job as a headline writer for the New York Post?
No.
I think I could do it. I think I'd be real good at it.
No.